Well, yeah, it's always best to be cynical on a podcast. It makes it much more interesting.
Pete's really far away in this shop.
What you've got to do is find another excitable idiot.
Bluey, it's Bluey. It's a kids' programme. Well good.
Yeah, or a thumb, or like half a face.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to another Single Track Magazine podcast. This week, I'm joined in the virtual studio by Benji. Say hello, Benji.
Hello.
I'm joined by Hannah.
Hello.
And we have a guest this week. We have top photographer Pete Scullion. Hi, Pete.
Hello there.
And I'm Mark. This week, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of things. But first of all, before we get going on that, I just want to remind you that we do have a brilliant subscriptions offer running at the moment. If you are not yet a full member of our magazine and website, then there is a special code you need to know. And that code is FreeBell03. That's FreeBell03. That code will get you a free bell. A bell of significance. It's one of the best bells for a bike that we think is out there on the market. It is the Timber Bell. And if you don't know what on earth we're talking about, then head over to our website, check out the offer, type in FreeBell03, and you will get a free bell for your bike when you join us. So get over there and do that now. Right, moving on to this week's episode. First of all, we're going to start with Ben, tech editor Benji.
Hello.
What is it this week that has caught your eye?
Canyon have released a invention. It's integrated into their Strive range of enduro bikes, aren't they, I think? And it's called KIS, which is Keep It Stable. Fundamentally, it's something, it's a pair of springs and a bolt on cam that bolts onto your fork steerer, and it makes your handlebars straighten up. I think that's probably the simplest way of describing it. It's not a damper, so it doesn't slow it down. It doesn't add any friction or anything to do. It literally pulls it back to being straight. And I think it gets weaker, which is the thing that people don't understand about it. It gets weaker the more you turn. So it's not like you're pulling on a pair of braces when you're doing a big 90 degree turn. That's actually quite weak at that point. It's quite weak over here when you're doing big turns. And then when you're coming more in a straight line, that's when it's stronger. So in a sense, it's a little bit like a steering damper in that it's kind of position sensitive. And the idea of it is, I don't know.
There's a thing here, isn't there? I think you fundamentally have a problem with the piece of tech when you're trying to explain it and you're miming at the same time. We're on video here, so we can all see each other, listeners. Ben's actually been sort of gesticulating to try and define what this thing does. We do actually have pictures of it, don't we, Ben?
Yes, I mean, it's definitely something that you can't put on your bike. It has to come on the bike. And I think you don't have to get a Strive with it, is the other point I would make on Canyon's behalf. You just get a normal Strive if you want, but you can get one that's got the KIS built into it, and it's inside the top tube, and there's like a little fader volume slider, Clem Fandango style, on the top tube that adjusts exactly how much you want it to have an effect or not. It's obviously come about for a reason, and we've not had a go on one, certainly no one's had a go on one for very long, other than the people at Canyon. So we'll see how it goes.
Have you been on to one? We're going to get one. We must get one.
I think they want everyone on them for quite a long time, I imagine, particularly after the launch where they had quite a lot of, just a lot of confusion, really, and a lot of, just like anything new, isn't it, really? I think I remember we had the same thing when gravity droppers came out. So there we are. What, you want somebody rubber gator or a spring in there? So you don't know. Who knows? I mean, it must be to do with keeping things calm and on track. I don't know whether it's to do with control or fatigue, and it's obviously something that's quite a niche thing. It's got Fabian Barrel's name all over it, literally and figuratively. And he's one of the best mountain bike riders of all time, so I'm not particularly going to argue with him. And he has had quite a big hand in all the bikes that we ride these days, whether we like to acknowledge it or not. From when he was on Kona, did his massive Kona stab. When he was on Forks, that had a secret third air chamber that, funnily enough, now all Forks are coming with, and kind of inventing forward geometry and all that. So I think if anyone is given the benefit of the doubt, it'll be Mr. Burrell. So there we go. But I think fundamentally it just looks odd, and the packaging of it is not helping the idea at all.
Do you think Canyon have thought about the poor mechanics who are going to have to learn something completely new when they want to disassemble a bike and do a simple job like taking a fork off?
I don't think they have, because they already do so much integrated stuff that makes the mechanics swear. I don't think they care.
They're not really showing themselves as the mechanic's friend here, are they? I mean, I
don't know. The mechanics will get paid more as a result, won't they? Everyone complains about internal routing or headsets. This is like, if people support your bike shop, these inventions are getting more money into bike shops, whether we like it or not. Because I'm not going to faff with my bike. It's paying in the arse, isn't it? So there is a... Well, I'm bored of the poor old mechanic. I mean, mechanics just are born to moan. But it's more money. And if they can have a big rack of bikes ready to queue up for the following week, it's like the good old days of the pandemic, isn't it?
Right, okay. Right, you just likened it to a dropper post, to a gravity dropper. Do you really think this thing is going to be the new dropper post? And I'm going to bring Pete in here because he's literally just shaking his head. Pete, what are your thoughts on this new invention from Canyon? It's not really a new invention, is it?
No, but it sort of echoes what you were saying of, like, can you actually imagine riding a bike without a dropper? I had a test bike not that long ago that came with a static seat post, and it was like I'd been launched back into the dark ages. I didn't know what, and that's all on me, really. I should be able to ride a bike with a fixed post, but every time I got to the top of a climb or the bottom of a descent, swinging for a lever that wasn't there. I've heard, apparently, from a few people that have ridden that bike that it's quite good.
So just for the uninitiated out there, why would you want self-straightening bars?
Strava lines.
Yeah, Ben. maybe if you go to ride the corner, but it's actually, maybe it spits you onto the Strava line better than it, instead of taking you around the actual ridden line.
I imagine that if you're going down something a bit rocky that makes your arms jiggle about as you get towards the bottom and your arms are tired, then maybe it would just take less effort to keep it.
I suppose it would put bump forces upside, like whatever angle they're coming at, would go not into deflecting your wheel and spinning your bars a bit, it would go into the suspension where it's supposed to go in the tyre. So it does have handling reasons. It's not done for a joke. And I think it's quite a subtle thing. That's the weird thing. It's such an integral revamp of a whole frame. But I think the effect is probably quite not a lot. But it doesn't mean it's not there. And this will be for people who are on the second day of EWS-ness, won't they? I'm assuming, where they just want anything to get rid of the...
Yeah, but that's...
So less knackered.
That's kind of like the new Bosch motor for racing only kind of thing. It's like super niche. Yeah. Whereas a dropper post, like retrofits, like it requires a hole in the frame.
I suppose the comparison to droppers was just how they've got iterations of design make them look better and integrated better. The first ones were not very good, were they? You had to rebuild them on your kitchen table every Sunday. But you'd have them. But nowadays we have a dropper post that's quite sleek and well done. So this is generation one of this KIS. imagine the people who designed it aren't very happy with it coming out. At some point, the people in charge say, that's got to come out this year. That's coming out. So I know you're not that happy with it 100%. You can always twiddle with it.
Are you implying that it's unfinished?
Everything's unfinished. If you have to get a designer, isn't it? It's like if we ask, you know, it's like unless you have a deadline, people would always refine and mess about, wouldn't you?
It is true. Right, okay, I think have we got mixed feelings? Is that a fair conclusion on this?
I think it's very easy to be cynical, isn't it?
Mm. So. Well, yeah, it's always best to be cynical on a podcast. It makes it much more interesting.
I think in terms of how it's gone down with the public, it's gone down very bad, but it was always going to. It was whoever was tasked with marketing KIS. So, poor guy or gal or team or whatever. It just was like...
It probably needed more like Specialized did with the status, where they got loads of people to ride it before they launched it. And then they would have had people going, oh yeah, this thing actually does a thing. Or makes sense.
On that note, we're going to move on.
Okay.
I sent out a newsletter on Saturday. We do our weekly newsletter. And the first of all, I'm going to give that a massive plug. So if you are listening and you don't yet subscribe to our newsletter, it's totally free. And we send it once a week. And it's full of extra editorial that you don't see anywhere else and a whole bunch of stuff and highlights and things that you might have missed. If you're not signed up to it, then head over to singletrackworld.com/newsletter. And if you go there, you can sign up for our newsletter. It's an amazing piece of editorial genius. Once a week in your inbox.
Because usually it's me that writes it.
It's true. It's true, yes. But not this week. You were on holiday last week. So I was tasked with writing the editorial. So I wrote an editorial. I just want to discuss it a little bit here because I was struggling to think of what the hell am I going to write about this week? You know, what sort of words of wisdom? And I just thought, you know what? The big thing that's actually taking over a lot of the time in this house and probably everywhere else around the country at the moment is cutting back on spending because of the rates of inflation, especially energy costs. I know this doesn't sound like a mountain bike topic, but it kind of swings around that way, so just bear with me. Like a lot of us, we were sat there looking at all of our outgoings and going, you know what, with everything going up, we're going to have to make some cutbacks. What are we going to cut back on? There's some easy things you can do. You know, it's like, all right, well, which tins of beans do we buy? Let's buy the value beans instead of... They're just the... Beans are beans, aren't they? They're just the same, whether you get the value ones from Tesco or Heinz.
I can't believe you weren't getting the value ones in the first place, to be honest. Okay, carry on.
Well,
money-saving tips from Mark.
Maybe not. Well, one of the things we saw, and I think a lot of people might have this problem, is we started to add up all of the things that we're subscribing to. And it comes to a scary amount each month. You know, all the streaming services, you know, Netflix. We've got Netflix and Disney Plus here.
And, how old are you?
Disney.
How many small children have you got at home?
Where else are you going to watch Star Wars if you don't have Disney Plus? Pete, you've got Disney Plus. Tell me you've got Disney.
DVDs from the charity shop. That's how you watch Star Wars.
Oh, I saw your post yesterday. I've got all of those DVDs. And do you know what? We don't even have a DVD player now, so we couldn't play them if we wanted to. But anyway, so I added up all these things and thought, God, we've got to cut back on this. And one of the biggest outgoings that we've got at the moment is myself and my wife, Vic. We go skateboarding twice a week, which is a whole topic in itself because I'm 51 years old and I've just started to learn to skateboard, which is a really dramatic change and exposure to injury. But we go twice a week to a place in Manchester that do adult skate lessons, and it's brilliant. And it costs a fair amount. Certainly it costs more, if we added up for a year, it costs more than streaming services and things. And it sort of screams out going, you know what, if we cut back on this, we could basically make up the entire shortfall caused by our increased energy bills. You know, we're hovering over going, we should cut this back. And then Vic says, but you know what, it brings me a lot of joy. And that got me thinking about the situation that we're all in right now, which is that quite often the things that bring us joy sometimes top the list of things that we think we should be cutting back on. And when I think about how much joy we both get from that skateboarding lesson, not just learning to skate, but also the people we meet and the experience we have, we both came to the conclusion, you know what? Things that bring us joy are just as important as other things in our life, like even, you know, like just, you know, food and things. And I know that we're in a very privileged position that we've got the, you know, we can do that sort of thing. But it just made me think, you know what, when we're all cutting back and everything, it's really, really important for our own mental health to make sure that we don't cut back on the things that actually really make our lives better and certainly our mental health. So for us, it's skateboarding. I just wanted to ask each of you, you know, what is it that you would be the last thing on your list that you would cut? The things that you'd really want to hang on to before you had to cut it because you just needed to eat. Hannah, what brings you joy, Hannah, that you pay for and you really want to keep paying for?
Oh, well, this is difficult because I've got a fairly lean operation anyway as a consequence of having got divorced. Don't do it, kids. Stay single. The thing, though, similar thing, actually, that does bring me joy, but you have to pay for it, is throwing myself in the foam pit at the bike, BMX park, especially in the winter. So yeah, I need to get back to that. It clashes. They do a BMX night and it's a little bit cheaper, but that clashes with the night ride group that I usually go out with. So then I have to choose, like, do I pay more to go another night, or do I go and ride in the dark and the cold and the wet, which is notionally for free but involves beer at the end. So yeah, post ride beer.
Beer, yeah. Beer is something we're all happy to pay for and would really rather not cut back on, yeah. I should imagine. Hey, there's a foam pit at the place where you go skateboarding, and it terrifies me just watching people. You know, it looks to me, you can tell me, because I've never jumped into a foam pit, and I'm not entirely convinced it's on my bucket list, having seen the people struggling to get out. It looks like the hardest part is getting out.
It is, yeah. It's like a full-on, all-over, every core muscle that you don't have body workout, yeah. And because then you start to sweat, all the like little bits of crumbly foam stick to you as well. It's probably not very healthy.
Right, it's definitely not on my bucket list now. Thanks for that.
It's great fun though.
Ben, what's the thing that brings you joy that you would really hesitate to cut back on?
Disney Plus.
Yes, I'm with you on that.
It doesn't bring me joy, it brings me silence. Or relative. It means I can go somewhere for a bit. And I've got sucked back into Star Wars things and Andor and all the series that are just on there. Yeah, Bluey's on there for the kids, kids program, Australian thing, cartoon.
No idea what you just said.
Bluey! It's a kids program. Well good. It's like the new Hey Dougie.
Nope, still nothing. I got nothing.
Other than that, I think we've ditched everything else. Just trying to think. We ditched childcare, ditched Netflix. I have just reinstigated, so I got a deal for YouTube Premium because I'm fed up of Google Home not doing what I want it to in the kitchen, which is just play me a song that I asked for. So I did capitulate on that front for a month. Other than that, I got nothing.
Yeah, you're not really cut back on the beer.
Don't do an awful lot, really.
What's wrong with you?
Now, Mr. Scullion here, though, he does not drink, which might be why he has so much energy to get up all these mountains. But
I do drink, I just don't drink alcohol.
You're not a camel.
A desiccated husk otherwise.
So Pete, what would be the last on your list of cutbacks?
That's a good question. I will though take this opportunity to apologize for failing to grasp the concept of a podcast when you asked me a question earlier and chose to shake my head instead of actually, you know, saying the answer, which is how I believe understand now that podcasts work. I mean, I think to sort of echo Hannah's running a lean operation, like I was skint as all hell for the best part of a decade, so I found some fairly ingenious ways to not spend an awful lot of money before things cost a load of money. So I don't think I actually have a subscription for anything. I'd say probably the thing I wouldn't want to cut back is putting diesel in the car to go and shove my bike up a large mountain. Like, I'm very lucky that I have trails here, and that because of my work with Wide Open, I get sent a lot of nice bikes to ride, and I could do that from the house. But every now and again, and that's usually an itch that has to be constantly suppressed, is to just go and vanish into the Highlands and spend far too much time shoving a bike up a mountain that's of questionable value in its riding down potential.
Where do you live, Pete? Just to give some context to the reason. We don't need your full address and postcode because we don't want anybody turning up on your doorstep. But, you know, where are you?
I am in Aberfoyle, which is 15 miles due north of Glasgow.
Nice. You've got some good trails up there.
Yes, some hilariously steep and slippy trails in the woods, and then the highlands essentially start behind the house. So pretty well spoiled.
Cool. All right, so there we go. Bear in mind when you're making those cuts and everything, if something brings you joy, hang on to it if you can. There's always something else that you should cut first. Look after your mental health, and that's a serious note. And on that note, I'm going to hand over to Hannah.
Right, I'm not sure how the segue works there, but okay.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I had a better segue actually, because Pete was talking about going up into the mountains. So, Pete, you do take your bike to the mountains that aren't necessarily mountains that are good for riding up and down, because you're
Correct.
Working your way through the Munros, aren't you?
Yeah, it became sort of a thing where I realised that I'd done quite a few and I should probably maybe see how many I'd done. And then just I started setting myself, you know, everybody sets themselves New Year's resolutions, that's usually they get to the end of January and decide to ditch it. Well, I just decided to get to a certain number of Munros by the end of the year. And then it just became a thing where you're like, oh, I wonder where I'm at. And then you get to like, I'm on 85 of 282 at the minute. And I don't really want to do them all because I've done some terrible 12-hour walks with a bike. I just want to go. I like the find a line on a map, and if it happens to go up a big mountain, then go and see if it actually goes on a bike. Usually 9 out of 10 is what I would call dog eggs, and the one is solid gold. So yeah, usually you do a lot of terrible bicycle riding or bicycle walking, and then every now and again you find the good stuff.
So okay, what makes you look at a line on a map that you can see goes up a lot of little closely spaced red lines and over a mountain, or look at a mountain and go, yeah, I'm going to go to the top of that? Because I look at mountains and go, look, they look really big from here, and that looks like a long way, and I'll just stay here and look at them from here. How do you find the motivation?
It's what me and a pal of mine describe as the fidget. Like, I'm a hopeless fidgeter, and Mark asking me to stay still for the recording of this podcast is not sitting well at all. It's sort of like there's just this sort of inner drive that I was an excitable child and have grown into a hairy, excitable child that just sort of never has really gone away. And it just sort of shoving a bike up a big hill is the one thing that gets me. It just sort of, it's the on-off switch. If you want to reset, you go and shove your bike up a big hill.
Damn it. So it's innate and there's nothing I can do. There's no tips I can have to acquire such boundless energy. Okay.
Well, so no, that's not true. And no. With that attitude, yes, you're consigned to eons of never having the fidget. What you've got to do is find another excitable idiot. And I would say Miss Rosie Holdsworth was the one I found who, like, I didn't ride a big hill until 2012. And Rosie said we should go ride Helvellyn, and I didn't even know what it was at the time. And then we went and rode it and I thought, oh my good Lord, I need to do more of that. So you need to find somebody that sort of has enough of that fidget that you sort of acquire some of it passively. Mm. And then if you go and do the right one, then you realize how good it is, and it doesn't look so far away because you've actually done it.
Okay.
You don't sound convinced at
no.
all.
It must be like doing it. It's like jumping though, isn't it? You don't start with a 50-foot double. You start with a little kicker, don't you?
Yeah, I think a lot of people who do a lot of big hills like myself sort of will go and do what I think is the best hill is probably everybody's idea of the worst. Like, I love an eye-meltingly technical descent. And for most people, like, you're probably not going to enjoy that, I'd imagine, Hannah. No. So what you've got to do is...
be is misery on the way up and the way down.
Absolutely, which is not the idea. So you've got to find somebody with enough sort of sense to maybe take you up the one that sort of feels way grander than it is, but is actually pretty straightforward. And they're like, there you go, see, you can do it. And then that's you get the passive fidget from that.
Is it all about the bikes? Is it all about the mountains? Or is it all about the creatures that you see when you're out there? What's the primary thing?
Well, I think it's definitely bikes. Is like, I've done a lot of different sports. Like, my parents were definitely the kind was like, well, you get them doing everything and eventually they'll find the thing that they want to do forever. So I did whitewater kayaking and bouldering and all that, football and everything in between. But when I got on a bike, it was the only thing that made sense. Like, you do sort of, I was never that great at one sport, but sort of could do reasonably well at all of them. But biking was the one that was just like, it gave me a feeling that I couldn't get anywhere else. It sort of evolved over time. I think I've appreciated the landscape and the animal and the wildlife more as a sort of, because I started racing downhill. And you don't really look at the wildlife or the landscape. And if you do, you're probably going to hit a tree very hard, and I'd advise against it. So I think it's changed over the years. It was definitely all about going as fast as I could go down a hill. And then it sort of found that pedaling is pretty good as well.
And then taking pictures of what you see when you're there. So I'm going to give a shameless plug for your calendar at this point.
Thank you very much.
So I don't think I know of anyone that takes quite such amazing landscape pictures as you. The pictures that you take in the mountains and the colours that you capture do make me think that maybe it's worthwhile going up into the mountains and seeing that. Although I can just look at the pictures that you take and they'd inevitably be better than the ones that I might get when I was there in the thick fog. So, yes, Pete has a calendar for sale for next year, and then you can look at the mountains from your living room.
How do we get hold of this calendar?
Contact me, please.
Instagram handle, possibly.
At Pete Scullion. It's pretty straightforward. I never went for one of these slightly strange Instagram handles. It's just my name. Sounds like it's spelled.
How many covers for single track have you done, Pete?
That is a good question.
Lost count.
Well, I can turn to my left, but you've told me not to because I keep all the magazines. My first was in issue 111, which was the... And then I've... Three or four.
I don't think there's anyone had more than that. Hannah would know more than I do, but yeah, certainly you're in our top ranking cover photographers. And it's interesting because we don't actually commission covers. We don't go out there and say, hey, you know, Mr. Photographer, this is a cover we need. We always choose covers from what gets submitted to us. And we work it on that way. So, Pete, when you're out taking shots, have you ever thought, because our covers have a certain, there's a difference to what I'd say is a traditional cover, isn't there?
Yep, definitely.
Because our covers are landscape, and the way that we use them means that the rider or the subject needs to be on the right-hand side of a landscape shot. So when you're out, are you conscious of that? And do you deliberately take shots that you think might actually work as a cover?
Well, the nice thing is about that and sort of the rule of thirds is generally you're going to have a rider left or right. So it sort of works quite nicely in that having the subject of the photo in where it's either left or the right works quite nicely. I mean, certainly when I've shot, I mean, you can see the people listening to this won't be able to see, but the prizes that you sent me when I won last year are both behind me. I would say the Sound of Arasaig one was definitely more of a, that worked because that's where that sort of knoll of rock happened to be. And it was, you weren't going to get
You couldn't move the mountains just to arrange it perfectly for us.
I could not, but it sort of worked rather nicely regardless. You wouldn't have got that shot out to Muck, Egg and Rum without it. Whereas the other one, which was actually a selfie, was completely unplanned. In fact, they were both unplanned, but that one was sort of set the timer and pedal like all hell was breaking loose, because where I needed to be in that shot was sort of far enough away from the camera that sort of that one was more of a trial and error kind of job.
The one that was a selfie, that was, which issue was that, Hannah? Can you remember? Or Pete, can you tell us which one it is?
It's 135, issue 135.
So I think that's only one of two covers that we've run, which were selfies. There's, I think that's you and Sam Needham, who've actually done selfies. And it's a remarkable thing, doing a selfie action shot. How many shots did you take to get that shot?
That was one of two bursts of five.
Is that setting the camera and getting off, running off? Because I think Needham's was a sneaky bar remote.
Yeah, Sam had engineered either an actual Wi-Fi trigger, whereas that one is a set the timer. But I've always had Nikons, so I've been doing timer shots since 2014. So you sort of get fairly used to where the beeps and the clicks are coming.
People listening to this should go to the website and look at the picture, because Pete's really far away in this shot and like perfectly against the mist on the ridge of a hill and all that. Like,
I mean, that morning was really quite spectacular, because it was sort of, I think it was you, Hannah, had suggested that I think I'd gone up that hill three times and been thwarted by snow. And then you were like, well, why didn't you write a sort of The Art of Persistence? And I thought, well, if I was going to go and shoot it again, why don't I make it as good as it can get? And I think we had one, it rained 27 consecutive days that November. And the one day it didn't rain, that happened. But I started like at 5 a.m. in the dark under a completely starry sky and saw the massive blue meteor that unfortunately didn't make it into a photo. And by the time I'd got back to the car, I think I'd been awake for 9 hours and didn't know what to do with myself. So I hadn't actually looked at any of the photos.
Wow.
So it's sort of one of those amazing mornings that you don't really ever get to appreciate until after the fact.
Hannah, we were talking before, we were going to ask Pete, weren't we, about how, you know, tips, how do you get a really good shot? I think he's just kind of outlined it, hasn't it? It's
getting up
at stupid o'clock, hang around all day, get massive. God, the commitment to be able to do this is quite stunning. But if you had some simple tips for people to get decent, let's say these good riding landscape shots. You mentioned the rule of thirds, which of course I think as all photographers out there would probably understand, but I guess most of our listeners might not know what you were referring to there. Is there something in that you can shape into a tip?
Yeah, essentially, I mean, I imagine most, if you're shooting with a phone or a camera, you'd be able to get the rule of thirds overlay onto the what you're shooting with, and it's essentially you're breaking the screen down into essentially 9 squares, and you want to get the subject on the corners of the central square or somewhere along those lines. And don't ask me why, because I don't know. Yeah, it just seems to work. You put the subject on anywhere on that central square, and it will look better than if it's anywhere else. It must be some way the human brain works that appreciates that sort of layout. But my tip would be to go and read the article I wrote for Single Track called The Art of the Photograph.
Where is this article?
I believe you can either access it on singletrackworld.com or go and purchase the actual magazine as a back issue. I think if to go back to your previous question, Mark, if there was tips, the one tip I think the problem is, and I've fallen into this trap before, is because there is so much media, because phones are making it so good to just churn out sort of half decent, like phone cameras are ludicrously good now, especially if you're the kind of person who queues up for the new iPhone, then you are going to you're going to get a good camera that can just take a decent photo with a press of a button. You don't have to think about it whatsoever. I think people just go and take photos because they feel like they have to. It's like, if I don't take a photo of that really sort of flat light, muddy ride in a plantation forest, like, I'm going to get left behind. But it's arguably the worst place to take a photo because there's no light and there's no colour. The UK being the UK, it's going to be overcast, which means the light's going to be terrible. So maybe just don't take a photo. Everything needs to look bigger than it actually is to make it feel as big as it is when you're riding it. Because you do like a 4 foot drop and your heart starts doing 220. And then you see the photo back and it's like your wheels don't look like they've come off the ground. So yeah, it's sort of, I think when people get frustrated with the photos they're not getting is they also don't see the amount of times a photographer won't get what they're after. Like what you don't see is a lot of the photos where I've got up at 5:30 in the morning and the forecast's changed and it's absolutely slapping it down with rain and I've just gone back to bed, but I've still got up at 5:30. Or you get to the mountain and you can't see it because of the fog and you think, well, there's lots of fairly precipitous cliffs around the summit. Maybe it's not the best time to shove up a new mountain in the dark. So you've got to give yourself enough opportunities to actually get the good stuff.
Can I take a total, I don't know, sidetrack here?
Like, go for it.
Is that allowed? So my daughter and all her friends take terrible photographs. Like deliberately terrible photographs. And those are the ones that they choose to print out and put on their walls and stuff. So literally the teenage fashion is for pictures that are like the ones that you got on a film where you went, oh shit, that was a waste of getting developed, wasn't it? And you took them out. I think it's
the one that comes with the "were you moving too fast" sticker.
Yeah, or a thumb, or like half a face. Yeah, I think it must be some kind of reaction to having...
For anybody under the age of 40, what Pete's just referred to there is a phenomenon. Way back in the days of film, when we'd get our photos back from the chemist, and the chemists themselves decide that they're going to pass judgment on our photographic skills by putting stickers on them that said you were moving too fast.
Or it was too dark, yeah.
Good yeah. times.
But yeah, so I think it must be a reaction to having the perfect shot, like the Instagram shot in your pocket at any moment. And I do wonder what that will do to... Oh, and the other thing is that they love old cameras, like my first digital camera that has 4 pixels or something. Like they like to take pictures on that and then get them printed out. So I wonder what it will do for the art of the photograph when this generation comes through.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, nothing to do with bikes at all. But
photography, that's where it's at. Right. I think we will probably bring this to a close.
Okay. It's so issue 142. That's where you need to go back. If you want to read Pete's article on the art of the photograph, you go to issue 142 of Single Track World.
We'll make sure there's links in the story that we put on the website around this podcast. And go and check it out. It's well worth doing it. So I'm going to say thank you, Pete, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
The amazing Pete Scullion, one of our most prolific freelance photographers. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And make sure that you go and check out some of his articles and some of his work. So from all of us, that's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from us.
Goodbye from
goodbye
me.
From him.
Bye. Later.
Right, just a note, I'm going to edit out. Ben, keep still.
Don't edit out.
Keep
sit still, boy.
Sit still,
microphone
Ben.
Or something. Give me something that works.
I will, but your microphone's bashing around as you gesticulate.
That?
That's
yes,
it. That's your microphone. You can get a hold of it and just hold it like that.
Well, no, then I won't say anything. I'll just sat here holding a fucking cable. So
no one can see you.
I know, but I'll just be doing that.
Right.
I've got to set the talent free.
See, this isn't getting edited out at all. Set to talent free.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.